We had a mutual friend.
Look, there you are.
Let me introduce you.
Okay, so our panelists are quite a enthusiastic group, and they're down here ready to go. I had this up so that after I do quick introduction, invite them up, you might be able to remember who you're talking to by seeing their face and name together. So we've got Carly Boyer. She's program director. They are here from the Oregon Climate and Agriculture Network. Jennifer Denson, Executive Director of Burrito Brigade. Melissa Ferry, Agriculture Small Farms, Oregon State University, the OSU Extension Service. Genevieve Schack, the Executive Director, Willamette Farm and Food Coalition. Shelley Schuler, Farmer and Food Artisan, Moondogs Farm and Lane County Bounty. Kara Smith, Food Resource Developer, Food for Lane County. So, let's see if you can find your way up and find a place to sit without falling off the stage. And after we get you situated, I think what would be great is we'll pass the mic around and you can introduce yourselves and just a little bit about what you do, and we'll go from there. All right. Whoever wants to start.
I just wanted the chair with the back. Jeez. Hi, I'm Jen Schock. I'm the executive director of Willamette Farm and Food Coalition, and we work in the areas of access, awareness, and agency in the local food system. So we try to let people know what's out there and help them connect with it.
I'm Jennifer Denson, executive director of Burrito Brigade. We're a unique organization. Hunger Relief is our newest model. We make 700 burritos every weekend. Then we run a free pantry Monday through Friday, and then we facilitate the 52 little free pantries around Eugene and Springfield.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ferry with Oregon State University Extension Service. In Lane County, we have our office here on 10th and Jefferson, and we are the local arm of Oregon State University, and we work with our community all around a bunch of different topics, including youth development, gardening, community family health, forestry, and in my realm, I work with agriculture production and small farms specifically.
Hello, I'm Kara Smith. I am the food resource developer at Food for Lane County. We are one of 20 regional food banks across the state of Oregon. And we're sort of the central collection, food donation collection, solicitation, and distribution hub for about 150 organizations across Lane County who are helping our friends and neighbors in need.
My name is Shelley Schuler. Primarily, I'm a farmer and a food artisan with Moondogs Farm. We grow tree fruits and vegetables, and we do a lot of value-added processing of our products. You'll see us at the Lane County Farmers Market on Saturdays as well. And additionally, I founded Lane County Bounty in 2020 as a local food delivery service to fill the gap when restaurants and farmers markets closed. We're still in operation, delivering local food primarily grown by small farms, and looking to expand our food hubbing activities and looking for more ways to support small farm businesses to be successful.
Hello, I'm Carly Boyer, and I'm a program manager for Oregon Climate and Agriculture Network, also known as ORCAN. And I'm also a land advocacy fellow for National Young Farmer Coalition. To tell you a little bit more about ORCAN, in a hard to say that a nutshell version of our work, but we're focused on soil health, and we do that through partner relationships with state, federal, nonprofit, for-profit organizations that serve farmers. So this is technical service providers, farm service providers, and we collaborate to help farmers and ranchers on the ground to get both resources and to advocate for them through policy in Oregon legislature. And probably some more stuff too, but that'll do it for now.
Jen wants the mic.
Well, because I was first and I was nervous, and the organization I work for actually has a bunch of disparate programs that it can be a little bit difficult to kind of see the big picture of in a quick second. So the awareness, access, and agency is definitely the point. But we just had Fill Your Pantry, in which we brought together 45 farm vendors, 7 community organizations. We distributed, we paid farmers over $12,000 in food that went to people in need. So keeping money in the economy. So we do this kind of systems work that is really hard to explain sometimes. Additionally, we also publish the Locally Grown Guide, which is a directory of local farmers, and we are heavily involved in farm-to-school work. And so we have helped 4J, for example, purchase 57,000 pounds of local food this year. A couple things we do.
Well, while you're on a roll, I think to help maybe get some of the discussion started with the folks, what would be described as some of your greatest challenges that you've had, and perhaps a few notable successes, and maybe some trends that you see in the near future, how people might get involved with that?
I think one of the biggest challenges in food systems in general is that subsidies happen at some level all the time. And big ag has subsidies, and that's where they lie right now. And what a lot of the people on the stage right now are working towards is maybe a little bit of redistribution and support at lower levels. So like our program, like Double Up Food Bucks, in which people who are on SNAP or food stamps can go to the farmer's market and pay $20, but they get $20 free in fresh fruit and vegetables, those kind of things to sort of subsidize and amplify efforts instead of being in the position of putting, you know, millions of dollars in subsidies towards crops insurance and unhealthy food. So I think, yeah, redistribution of where money goes and keeping equity in mind when we make those decisions is one of the biggest challenges. One of the biggest successes is the farm to school work that's been going on. School districts, large and small, are making moves, recognizing the improved health outcomes of better food in schools, the fact that if we feed kids, they do better in school, and kids who do better in school then are better members of our community. It's a whole thing, it's really great. And then ways people can get involved, you know, I would say volunteer with Jen or Food for Lane County. They're great. You know, boots on the ground, but also affecting systems change in ways that are really meaningful.
I'll move next. So we started our free pantry in March of 2020, kind of we work in collaboration with Food for Lane County, I would like to say, because we do things in between that the things that they can't do, we do. So we pick up food that was on the last slide that is maybe a restaurant or something that can't be used immediately, and we reportion it. We were fortunate to get our own building. I guess the biggest challenge of this last year was we got our own building at 6th and Chambers, and so we rebuilt the kitchen for it to be a commercial kitchen, but then the point is, hopefully, I was very inspired by that guy making home deliveries, but that there is so much food waste, even with the stuff that Food for Lane County doesn't pick up, that we are picking up. As of last week, we had picked up 190 tons of food through our organization that was just not what Food for Lane County can pick up. So because we are this little like ally, I wanna say, with Food for Lane County, that we pick up things that they can't pick up. And you know, we pick up restaurant food and then we portion it and we get it to the unhoused, or we incorporate it into our burritos, or we put it in our food pantry. You know, like, that there's so much food waste. And, you know, just tonight I was offered a few pounds of imperfect garlic. And it's just like the fact that things are imperfect. And my hope is what will happen is the letting people educate that something bruised, like a bruised apple, like we will give away boxes of bruised apples because people will either turn it into sauce for their kids for the winter or turn it into juice. That the fact that something is ugly does not mean it's not edible. And so that would be my biggest, I guess, yeah. So that's...
Okay. So through OSU Extension, one of the things that we are all about is providing reliable, maybe trusted information, science-based information to farmers and ranchers. And I have the opportunity to work with a wide variety of small-scale farmers and ranchers that are in the business of producing food for everyone and marketing that food locally and regionally. And through OSU, we do a lot of applied research directly with farmers. So one example would be a dry farming collaborative that was set up several years ago by one of my colleagues and other partners. And there's a farmer on the panel here tonight that has done dry farming. And what that means is growing crops without irrigation in the summer. And if you could believe it, there are varieties of melons and tomatoes that you can grow without irrigation here by drawing on the resources of healthy soil and the moisture that's retained in that soil through those summer months. So I think that's a pretty big positive and an opportunity for people to grow without irrigation water, which is limited here in the Willamette Valley and throughout Oregon. And yeah, I think that's a success. I mean, there's a lot of challenges. I get to work with people that are working really hard to raise livestock responsibly, and that's pretty difficult at times. We're looking at new varieties of forages that don't require as much water, and most of our forages are dryland. So we're trying to find varieties for growers to have integrated into their fields that would be more drought and heat resistant in the summertime so that there's feed for livestock. And there's research, collaborative research going on to breed new crop varieties like hops and barley and hazelnuts. So that those would be more resilient to climate change and disease pressure. So there's a lot of cool things going on, and that partnership between the University Extension and our local farmers is really critical.
I forgot the question. Is it... greatest challenges and some opportunities? Oh, wow. Okay. So I've been at Food for Lane County for about 14 years, and I think one of the biggest challenges that I have seen is that we are in this lush, like, valley where there is so much food. Everybody can actually mostly eat within a 20, 30, 50-mile radius, and it's amazing. It's unlike that. I'm from Texas originally, from a big city, and it's not like that from where I grew up. And yet hunger has still remained high for the last 15 years, probably many years before that, and it's quite incredible. Despite the fact that we work with over 200 food manufacturer businesses that are here in the community, that it's amazing what they do. It's amazing what they do. They donate so much food that otherwise would have been destined for the landfill, like things, maybe there was an omission on their product line, or maybe there was a mislabel or something like that. And we're able to work with our volunteers and in our system and get that food repackaged, relabeled, and get it out to the community, which is astounding. Just to give you a little bit of sense of that, just last year for 2022, we brought in just under 8 million pounds of food. Half of that was from our local community, from businesses. And it's quite incredible. It's quite incredible how much care that our
that our local food businesses put into making sure that if it is something that somebody can eat, it's going to get out to organizations like Burrito Brigade or Food for Lane County, which that's, I think, a really positive thing to talk about.
Okay. Wow, there's so many entry points into food. And I am just like really glad to be on this stage with all these people because we all have a different little angle and take. And we all actually know each other pretty well. And we work together. So one of the hats that I wear as a farmer is trying to figure out the economics of farming, how to make a sustainable business. The sustainable economics of farming is truthfully the last aspect of farming that I've considered in my career. First, I was like, how can we make this environmentally sustainable? Let's learn how to dry farm. By the way, dry farm tomatoes taste better than other tomatoes. So this is a great, Cynthia knows. Amy Garrett has been a great leader in that field as well. So there's an entry point in terms of climate change, right? The small farming doesn't make a lot of sense economically. And I know that many of the small farmers in our community are operating at a loss or have some sort of subsidy within their household economy. Like somebody else has a job that pays the bills. There are some solid farms in our community that will operate in a negative sometimes. And clearly we continue doing this because we recognize that it is a vital service. And without it, we wouldn't have food. So food really starts with farmers, and we can't leave the economic health of farmers out of the conversation. The government spends a lot of money subsidizing large-scale farming. We're not gonna run out of soybeans or commodity corn. But what we really need to support is fresh, nutritious, organic, or sustainably raised produce. I think we like to romanticize small farms. We think of it as like the American homestead, like how it should be. The good old days when we all just raised our food with our family. And I think that our customer base as farmers plays that up because it's idyllic and people feel good when they support small farms because they think they're like upholding that sort of pull yourself up by your bootstraps and be really independent and so I think we put farmers on a pedestal, and I don't think that's sustainable. I think that small farmers, in order to stay in business, stay afloat, doing what they love to do, which is feed the community, we need a lot of help. We need subsidies on the small scale. We need access to better infrastructure and services. That can, in community organizations that can pull in government funding that we as maybe for-profit businesses would have a harder time accessing. So Food for Lane County was one of my biggest customers in 2020. You got so much funding to buy local food and redirect that into the community. So we miscalculated how many Hawkeye turnips our customers would buy. By a lot, like a lot. And like every day you don't harvest them, they just get a little bit bigger. And bok choy as well. We had a massive amount of bok choy. It's really easy to grow, really hard to sell. So I was so grateful that we connected, and I was able to box up more than hundreds of pounds of produce. And instead of composting that or attempting to feed it all to my chickens, which wouldn't have worked, I was able to put money in my bank account. I was able to support my staff members. I was able to continue farming. So I also want to say that there's two conversations sometimes in separate circles. There's food access and making food affordable for everybody, especially our poorest community members. And the burden of finding a price that those folks can pay for should not fall on farmers. We should not be asking sustainable small farmers to lower their prices because you're just asking them to just back right out of business if that's what you want. So we need to find other funding sources to pay farmers to send food to the Burrito Brigade and to Food for Lane County. And we have some people who are really good. Genevieve is amazing at telling the story to the federal government to bring these resources into our community and then help with this redistribution.
Or, yeah, like we took $5,300 from Trillium Funds this last year, and I partnered with Jen, and people that came to our pantry were given a voucher to go to Fill Your Pantry for the first time. So they were able to experience this event for the first time, and we were able to spend these funds that I was given to spend on money when I'm a food rescue, which is a very bizarre concept. But then Jen and I got together, and we thought we could give this opportunity to the people that come to our pantry to go to Jen's Fill Your Pantry event, and $5,300 was redeemed this last weekend.
Sorry, Carly, I know you still have to answer that. But what it meant was that hundreds of people got to have the agency of choice of picking out what they wanted to eat. They got to go to this new thing. They got introduced to these farmers. They got to be plugged into our local food system in a way that they would not have otherwise. And without having to like feel demoralized, they got a cute little token or paper voucher that was the same as cash, and they just got to go and spend it and have that agency.
And what I think a lot of us value in that service to our community is that it's not charity. We're not giving out money. We're not helping the poor. We're empowering people to make their own choices about the food that they receive. They can choose foods that are more appropriate for them culturally. So I think a lot of us share the value of like solidarity and mutual aid within our community as opposed to a charity situation, which doesn't actually aim to change anything, but just to like throw some crumbs out. So I think a lot of us are working to fundamentally change the way food is distributed in our community, and we're getting there. We're doing really well. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I really love and admire these incredible presenters, and I'm really proud to be on this panel with them all because they're all badasses. They really are. We are, actually. What was that? That's good. That's clever. All right. So about Orkin, our challenges and our wins. That'll work. All right, so I wanted to really share about some of our legislative work, because in the last short session, Megan Kemple, who's our executive director, was a huge advocate in actually bringing home the Natural Climate Solutions Fund here in Oregon. And that's like 10.4 million, I think, 10.6 million, pretty close to that, into Oregon. And that money is really gonna be going through the different state and nonprofit organizations to then distribute to farmers and organizations serving farmers to have climate adaptive farming. And that really covers in a lot of different ways, because fortunately through advocacy and through all of these conversations, Oregon and the Fed are really starting to understand that you really need to fund farmers to be able to get climate adaptive farming. It can't just happen. Farmers don't usually have the money or capital to invest in specific improvements that are really critical to respond to climate change. So that's been really cool to be a part of that. And we're really talking with quite a few different organizations on how that's going to deliver and happen. And really soon, we're a part of the OCFSN, Oregon Community Food Systems Network, in their announcement of the climate, what is it, disaster resilience program, which is going to be announced in like a week and then open January 1st. And part of why they're a recipient, or not a recipient, but the intermediary for delivering that fund is because they're nimble. They're able to be responsive and get the money out the door to farmers faster than our state can. So ORCAN is a part of that conversation and helping money get out the door. And I'd say that's a pretty big win. Especially in, you know, hearing from everybody else here, you can't just expect farmers to be able to change the world. You have to fund them to be able to do it. It really isn't an entirely net positive.
Or just buy their stuff.
Yeah, that too. Right, yeah. So those are all pretty big wins. I'd say a challenge is, on that flip side, that farming is pretty challenging, especially in response to climate change and needing to be nimble and responsive to unknown weather that can happen on the change of a dime, really.
And the pests are getting worse.
Right.
It's hard, just so much harder to farm.
It is. No, thank you. Yeah, so what do we do about that? Well, there needs to be more resources and a lot more equipment. I hear over and over again that farmers need specialized equipment, in particular no-till drills. And I've been learning more about the particular equipment. Roller crimpers are another big one that will terminate a crop, like a cover crop, so that you don't have to spray it dead, because that's often a response within the no-till kind of system, is just to kill it dead with herbicides. And hey, that works for some farmers, but that doesn't work for all farmers. And how are we going to be able to do that and maintain a no-till or reduced tillage environment? Specialized equipment. So how do we get that to farmers? It's often very expensive. Small equipment can be up to $10,000. Significant equipment that will help farmers that are managing 10 to 50 acres plus hundreds of acres, they need pretty large, significant infrastructure. Sometimes those pieces of equipment can be like $250,000. I mean, I don't know the exact, but I think those are ballpark. But it's a lot. It's a lot. And so one way to solve this is by funding these equipment and then getting it into soil and water conservation districts, so that you could have rental programs or checkout programs so that farmers don't have to fund that out of pocket and can get that out to the folks who need it. So that's a big problem, and that's something that ORCAN's really working on as well. And there's a lot of things we're really looking at, because there are many problems, there are many challenges, but we're really looking for solutions and to support farmers' bottom line through working with all of these amazing organizations.
Well, I
just really quick, that was also said in at least two of the movies very explicitly. Sorry, I can also talk loud enough that usually people can hear me. Is that, like, crickets aren't the solution. Vertical farming in Jackson Hole certainly isn't the solution. but we are looking at a menu of solutions. We are crafting, we are all cooks, and we are putting together a menu, and we are figuring out what we can offer you as eaters, as growers, as community members that you can pull from and therefore meet that need.
Well, you all have presented some incredible, lots and lots of information to, you know, food for thought, no pun. And I think this is
from this panel, what did you think you were going to get?
No, that's why you're here. You're awesome. Good opportunity to turn it over for the audience to ask some questions or, you know, comment as well. So why don't we do that?
This one's for Jen.
Oh. Wait. Which Jen?
Wait, I think it's... Jen.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, what makes your food bank unique?
Thank you, Chris. So
He asked what makes our food pantry unique. So when COVID hit, I established a what we call waste to taste. So the premise is that you walk in and it's presented like a grocery store. So we take food that is imperfect foods, like you would get in a box, but we set it up like a grocery store. So it is set up Monday through Friday. And the thing is that people make appointments instead of a line. And so what we're trying to do is, which was touched on the last documentary, is giving people dignity to ask for support again. So there is, 40% of our local landfill in Lane County is food. And yet there are 1 in 5 of your neighbors that is going hungry. I daily get an email that says somebody has not eaten in 24 hours. And that is more heartening, that disheartening more than the person that tells me that they got a full food box. The fact that we feel that food is ugly or, imperfect, and that it is not for human consumption is boggles my mind in the country that we live in. Thanks to Jen and Shelley, I've done lots of partnerships. I'm getting even more partnerships with local farms that we should be taking B-grade things that they've, can't sell at the farmer's market anymore because it's ugly, but I couldn't possibly be able to offer it at the pantry. And the hope is, I've been fortunate. So we started this in March of 2020. We have a great relationship with Food for Lane County that it's almost like we are working in collaboration. So that if Food for Lane County maybe can't take something because they are a federally food bank-ish, that it can be like, hey, Jen, do you want this thing? Or, hey, Jen, my driver's out and can't go to this grocery store. Can you pick up? And, it should be a mutual aid. It should not be us competing each other for food. Sadly, none of the apps, Good Food Hero or Carrot are both great apps for big cities. Neither of those are accepted in Eugene, or nobody uses them, like restaurants and stuff. But yes, we'll get an email that a catering company is like several trays of food. Well, if I don't respond quick enough, then the food is not sustainable anymore. So it's like there's a broken piece that this whole panel is working, that we need. People should not, 1 in 5 in our community of Eugene and Springfield should not be going hungry.
I also want to say that actually my relationship with Jen developed in part because I was a waste to taste customer, because as Shelley once said, the farmers aren't not all right, but neither are the nonprofit employees. And it was really great, because there is this sense of dignity of being able to go and choose. And I'm a gluten-free former vegetarian who's allergic to cinnamon, and Jesus Christ, like, if you put me in a food box, it's hard, because I don't want to throw half of it away and, or donate it back. But I was able to go there and really be able to, supplement my needs and be able to, be nourished while I'm developing these programs and the organization I'm working for is growing and things like that. But one of the big differences is that Waste to Taste does not have a declarative income requirement. And a lot of food supplement programs do. So a lot of people who don't qualify for SNAP are still very, very hungry. And a lot of people who don't qualify for food boxes are still very, very hungry. And so when you ask what might make that type of program and the Little Free Pantries a little bit different, is that it is about mutual aid and it is outside of that federal system and these poverty guidelines, because you know what? You don't actually know how poor someone is or what struggle they might be having. If someone needs food, we should just make it so they can have food. But that doesn't mean we should ask the farmers to donate it all the time.
What is the problem with the vertical agriculture idea?
Perfect.
While we were, I'm sorry, I was on my phone during the movie, and I looked them up, and they, the amount of capital raised to build those buildings would have been really nice if we had just purchased some farmland and supported some farmers in getting started with a soil-based farm. So it was $3.85 million were privately raised. Would anyone like to buy somebody some food with that money, or...
Jackson Hole is the richest fucking county in the entire
country.
That's why they were able to do it.
I'm gonna keep the mic over here. And the main the one in Maine, they're trying to raise $80 million for that building. The business model has not been proven, and advisors that go and work with some of those privately held firms are not convinced that there is a business model that is sustainable there. It is a huge amount of energy that it takes to do that.
So how much farmland, just for my own perspective, how much farmland could you get out of 3.8?
I'm sorry, we need a real estate agent up here. I can't do it. I don't know.
Here's just a simple thing, and someone can fact check me, but I believe that that plot of land was 30 feet by 150 feet, yeah, which is 4,500 square feet. And she said she, in the vertical gardening, she's growing 5,000. So that is a net.
5,000.
No, it's like it's. There was a net gain of 500 square feet in $3.8 million. And I know that I can do more, and I am not a farmer, with $3.8 million than 500 square feet. I live on 0.1 acres in the middle of town, and I can grow more than that. Oh. That wasn't me.
The other thing about that is lettuce is a pretty simple thing to grow year-round in high tunnels, so it's just not a big need. I think people sometimes want things to be flashy and new and to figure out a new solution to growing food, and that's not what we need. We need to figure out a new solution to distributing food and paying for it. So that's.
I'm curious too about the water use for hydroponics, your method of farming and the expense that would go into that. So I think we support soil health and improving our soil as a natural resource and growing food in it. And I bet it can be just as nutrient dense and beautiful as those pictures in that video. Yeah. I mean, she had a cool story in employing people that might not be able to find jobs elsewhere and other things that were really heartfelt, but I don't think vertical farming is where it's at.
I'd like to put in a good word for Jen Denson. I've known her since she started making burritos. I feel as though we've collaborated on a number of things related to homelessness through the years. I'm a part of an organization that was started by a Catholic worker, a local renegade Catholic group that has been delivering breakfasts and lunches for 9 years. We're so fond of her that we named our breakfast organization the Breakfast Brigade. We are sorry to have plundered your name. But we just really appreciate everything you've done for homeless people. And I've started a few organizations, and Jen has come to speak to them. And we just, those of us who work with homeless people are just totally dependent upon so much of what you've been talking about and what you're doing. So thank you. Oh, and we all need to start going to city council meetings again, because that group dried up.
Yeah.
And it's so necessary to get your fists like this when you go to those meetings. Otherwise, nothing happens. They were going to kick our breakfast group out of Washington Jefferson, and we just showed up and said, you can't do it. We're not leaving. We're just not leaving. So
I want to thank you and congratulate you on that, because I watched that happen. And I think that that was a really beautiful expression of mutual aid, community empowerment, right. The best use of privilege in a way, but like also just being like, seriously, this is the hill I will die on. And yeah. You didn't. Yeah. So congratulations.
I'll just segue from what Wayne just said. I mean, it's hard. I got a call today from a neighbor that is claiming that the little free pantry at Monroe Park is causing the camping on Monroe and 10th. And the problem is, to segue on everybody has said, you know, it's costs. It has nothing to do. We have campers. We have the unhoused in Eugene and Springfield, and rent is going up and food is going up and people are not being able to survive. The little free pantry on the corner that people are getting food free access from. And sometimes I've had an unhoused person that come up to me and that like they ate for the first time in 24 hours because of our pantries. Our pantries aren't causing. It has to be a systemic issue that this is a mutual aid. We need to think about our fellow person, and when somebody has a full belly, they are a better part of society. When a child has breakfast and lunch at 4J, thanks to the farm's school, they learn better and they are a better person. Like, this has to be a bigger conversation that food is essential. As the van of Burrito Brigade said, food is a human right. Like, the fact that we are restricting food and like asking farmers to chop down their prices is not fair. And the fact that I was introduced to this group this year and able to offer the shoppers at our Waste to Taste pantry, able to go to Fill Your Pantry, and that we have the double up bucks now, that so people know that when they go to Lane County Bounty and they go to the farmers market, they can use their SNAP twice as much. Like, it needs to be food. Just, I don't understand how food is not essential to everyone, because we would all just be a happier society if everybody had a full belly. Yes.
Oh, I don't want to stand up. Is it on? Is it on? I don't hear it. Do you hear it? Yeah, that's always hard. I go to the farmers market every Saturday, so grateful for all the farmers. I find it important. I don't idolize them or try to make them something they're not, but I do think that saying thank you brings a light into their face every time I do it. Thank you. I'm so grateful. One of the things you said, you mentioned the word charity. Mm-hmm. I love that word. Mm-hmm. And I felt when you said it that there was something else there that you were wanting to express. I didn't understand. And I was wondering if maybe you'd take a moment and just review that.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I think that this is a group that is interested in breaking things a little bit. And our current economic system, it keeps people without power, without the ability to feed themselves. Our minimum wage is so low that people can't really rise up out of it. I think that some charity goes hand in hand with that system as a way to make us feel better about not changing the systemic issues. So I think when we look at teaching people how to fish instead of just giving them fish, that's sort of the analogy that I'm talking about. Anyone else want to try to describe that one?
I think that was great. One point.
Oh. Does that make sense, Cynthia? You look like Cynthia. I'm so sorry. Thank you.
I have a question. I'm curious about whether or not Lane County is already seeing the effects of climate change, for instance, on the growing season, water in this area, and how farmers are having to adapt. And if so, how are farmers having to adapt to that?
Great. Well, I can't address it on all levels, but I do know that just yesterday, the USDA's zones, the planting map, was changed. It was updated and just published yesterday. And there is significant change across the whole country, with many places going up to the next zone. Oregon has a lot of different zones. I think Eugene has traditionally been 8A. But seven?
It was seven when I was like 30 years ago.
But right, but yes. I think, yes. Yeah, so you should check out that map because I haven't studied it yet, but I know that it is quite different from the last time it was released. As far as overall climate impacts, I think everybody's really feeling it. We could probably ask Shelley to talk about it, but I would check out that USDA planting map.
We also know that our water resources are becoming more limited. There's the Oregon Water Resources Department is looking to regulate groundwater use more heavily now because we have aquifers that are very limited and wells are going dry. And part of that has to do with population growth and other, another reason is that they're not getting recharged through our snow melt and surface water recharge. So that's another sign that things are changing here in Lane County as well.
Oh no, it's my disaster resilience talk now. So one of the things that actually must be contended with is the fact that fires happen during harvest season, and when the AQI reaches 980 and 1300, there are two people out there working, and it is firefighters and it is farmers. And if we lose crops, and we are going to eventually lose people because they are doing that work. And so, I'm trying to be positive, Kate. So the increased fire seasons and the immediate effects, it doesn't actually have to be long-term climate change of that like a high AQI level. It's the long-term climate change of more severe fire events that are causing more sustained AQI events and more regular ones that it actually is very much impactful to harvest times and to people's health.
That was what I was gonna bring up too, is just the intense challenge, the added challenge of needing to farm in AQI that will impact your long-term health. I don't know if it will shave days or months or years off of our lives if we decide to do 8 hours of labor in AQI over 300 or 500. But we do that, and that's how dedicated we are. So it's just added an additional challenge and an additional physical impact. My farm was a mile and a half away from the edge of the Holiday Farm fire, and we were in Marcola. So Upriver Organics, or formerly Rednecks, they almost burned. And those community members who live on that farm needed to flee in the middle of the night. We were luckier than that, but we were still pretty worried, and we needed to evacuate. We were in like the red level for about a week and a half or something. This is like peak harvest season. We had the most produce out there, and going to the farm in a gas mask to check on the chickens and looking at the climax of our productivity, sitting on the vines and making the personal choice to not put myself through the impact of working that harvest season. It was really challenging. It was really very hard. And it's become a regular thing. Not to mention the farmers markets themselves. People are not going to go down to purchase our stuff. And those are some of the most important markets for farmers. That August market with the melons and the tomatoes is where we make up for some of our slower shoulder season days. So it's really critical.
I was able to do a little bit of food rescue, you know, because of connections with farmers and firefighters and the Red Cross. And so I was able to bring several hundred pounds of food to the evacuees at the Lane Event Center. But there also needs to be, like, I need someone to give me $25,000 that's not on a grant cycle, so hopefully I don't have to spend it on this, that I'm not going to lose this funding because of the way grant funding works. But so that way, every single time that this might happen, that I can have a system in place to go rescue that produce from the farmers and take it to the people who have evacuated their homes and actually really want a salad. Like, they really do. And there's ways to build these systems, and, you know, this is very much a large part of the group that's trying to do it right now. So it's very cool. I want to actually thank Eric for really doing his homework on who he asked to be up here tonight, because these are the badasses. So I'm honored to be among you.
Thank you for asking that. We don't quite know what major issues we're going to be pushing for the next session, but generally to support farmers, I would recommend looking to Friends of Family Farmers. They're always really right on the pulse, and they really help us to get a lot of things passed that are super critical. You can check them out. I don't know that I could accurately exactly say all the things that they did in the last session, but they accomplished a lot. They did. They got a lot. Stopped CAFO, and then also like milk. There was like a raw milk one that they got past.
Farm Direct stuff.
The Farm Direct stuff. Yeah, they're huge advocates for small farmers across the board. Also, there's probably going to be some significant, more nitty-gritty details on how money gets moved to fund farmers, and that can be a little harder to navigate. You can always follow, or can, my organization, because we do share about some of the particulars on just like kind of the fine-tuned details. And ORCAN is Oregon Climate and Agriculture Network. And I do have some leaflets out in the lobby with our little QR code, and you can sign up for our little survey, and we'll keep you informed. You don't have to get all of our emails. You could just specifically say on, like, legislation and policy updates.
Well, and I would just say, like, look up your local representative, but also check out the platforms of the Native Farm Bill Coalition and the National Young Farmers Association. They have some really good things that they're moving forward. And they just extended the Farm Bill for another year. So we actually do have a year to do some advocacy. And the Farm Bill is very important because it is where SNAP and food stamps are housed. It is where a lot of the funding for climate smart agriculture is now coming from. So it is a very broad landscape, but we do have another year, and those would be the folks I would say to check out their platforms and advocate with your local legislator to support those.
That reminded me, of course, my other hat. National Young Farmer Coalition are huge advocates for the national federal level. And actually, I had the great honor of going to the U.S. Capitol last March with young farmers to advocate for the Farm Bill. And specifically, young farmers is really angled on land access to for beginning farmers and BIPOC farmers, because there's like 99% of landowners are white, and I think 98% of farmers are white. So there's a lot of, there's a huge disproportion of who has access to land and who has access to even farm. So we need a lot of kind of sea change at a national level, because who's most interested in adapting regenerative farming practices? It's young farmers. We're the ones that are most willing and interested and passionate about managing all the many hurdles that are coming our way. So how do we fund and redistribute resources to empower young farmers? Well, one bill that's up right now is called the LASSO, Land Access Security Opportunity. Something close to that. I should have reviewed these ones. LASSO, look up for LASSO. And it's all about redistributing money to farmers to purchase land. That's a federal program, and it would be an annual fund, which is right connected to another bill that was passed last year that was $100 million, a one-time for land access. And this is just asking for it to be a permanent program that is funded annually to keep distributing money out for young farmers. So that's a really big one, and we're pushing a lot for that right now. And I'm really hoping that that gets passed.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest perhaps that we're getting close to our time to have to exit this stage, but maybe we have time for one last comment. And I had a question for you, Shelley and Carly, regarding the Solon Conservation District. You had mentioned that might be a channel, and they're looking at working programs for providing farmers with equipment access that you had mentioned that's a big challenge and a need for the farmers. And I don't know if that's something that as a community member we can advocate through them or as another channel to help, because that seems like a very important part of your ability to do your work. So maybe address that. And one last thing before I'm off this is we have on our website a follow-up to all of these panels, and we'll have a page, and I'll aggregate, get from everybody on the stage resource information and put that there. As soon as I get it and can aggregate it, I'll get that up so that we'll have a place for people to go and get the information they need to become better advocates. Yeah. Go ahead, Shelley.
Thank you. I'm going to use the topic of equipment and sharing equipment and sharing infrastructure to briefly, before we leave, discuss one local cooperative project that farmers are coming together around. So one way that we're helping each other and sharing resources, sharing marketing, just making our lives easier is a cooperative project that, let me start over. Lane County Bounty, I mentioned at the beginning, it's an online marketplace where people in Eugene can purchase local food from over 40 different vendors, and we deliver direct to your door, or you can get it picked up in town. And not all of our vendors have the ability to reach the size of our customer list, for instance. So there's a power in numbers when it comes to this. There's power in numbers when it comes to sharing a delivery vehicle, for instance, just the same as a piece of tractor equipment. So I want to encourage everybody to support local farms in whichever way you do that, whether it's at the farmer's market, whether it's through a CSA, whether it's tracking down actual local food in the grocery stores. For instance, Sundance, Capella does a great job of that, the Kiva. So Lane County Bounty is another way to get local food, and it pings on that like accessibility because of the convenience factor. So we're hoping that that convenience will actually increase the amount of local food that's being consumed within Lane County. We have a steering committee right now. We are attempting to transition Lane County Bounty from a private business into a cooperative model where the farmers would not only have access to those services, but they would literally own them. And so when you would shop on this shared marketplace, it's truly farm direct because your farmer is benefiting from the group resources. And when we can pull in funding from all these nonprofits, it works for the group. So there, it's a focal point to support farm infrastructure and farmers in an easier way for a lot of farmers to collaborate with these amazing nonprofits and to split the resources between them. So,
and I think to touch base, then that affects the climate change by. Even if somebody is going to our free pantry, but they are getting garlic or onions that are local that had less transportation costs overall, and that's what we need to do is like cut the underbelly or cut the legs out, and just things just need to be. We live in a beautiful valley that has a plethora. You know, I lived in New Mexico for 10 years, and there was no pretty things, and not. You know, chilies were grown, but like the fact that we live in this beautiful valley that our produce shouldn't be coming from 1,000 miles away.
80% of the food grown. 80% of the food grown in Oregon leaves Oregon. 40% of it goes overseas.
40% goes in the landfill.
And on that.
That 40%.
Support local farmers, eat local food, increase your local food consumption by 20%.
Thank you so much. All right. You all are badasses, and thank you so much for being here. It's great.
Good or bad?